I'm back. It's good to see you all again. What I'm going to do today is introduce you to something a little bit different. We, as some of you know, I haven't met everybody here, but some of you know my role. I'm Manager of Research and Innovation at Service Render. And that actually is a very eclectic role, because there are times when we're actually conducting research in partnership with universities, and there are times when we're trying to facilitate research in-house and doing it ourselves. But at the end of the day, I think the real role is to foster and facilitate innovation. I see research simply being one avenue that you bring in new knowledge and new ideas to the corporation to allow us to do things better, to do new things in different ways. And other ways are to bring ideas from our own people, and you're going to see a bit more around that in the coming weeks. And one of my roles also is to get out there in the world and see what others are doing differently, to see what is happening new and different in the world that might impact us, might allow us to think differently about how we do things, to give us new ideas, to make us better able to serve the citizens in the country. And so today, I've got two people that I've invited to share some of their insights with you, and I'll just give you a brief background. The first person that's going to talk is Stephen Downs. This is Stephen right here. Stephen is a researcher at NRC, and I met Stephen probably 2 or 3 years ago down at the Innovation Forum in St. John that was organized by NRC, and he was talking about learning theories and learning platforms. And I became quite interested in what he was talking about, and so became an avid follower of his very prolific blog, Downs.ca. And is it Downs.ca? Yeah. And so was abreast of what he was doing, and some of the stuff that he was doing was working in massive open online courses and personal learning environments and networks. And so I signed up to a couple of them, the latest one being Plank 2010, which is personal learning environments and knowledge networks. And Stephen's going to talk a bit more about that, but I found it to be a very interesting new way for me to engage with people in a learning process that I hadn't done before. And it helped me to have a deeper understanding of what it was, and also a little bit of a customized understanding, for me anyway, as we went through this course. And I think Stephen's going to elaborate on it a little bit. So that's one thing we're going to do. The idea here is that we're constantly, we're in a very change, a very, very rapidly changing environment. There's a lot of new knowledge, new information, new ways of collaborating with people that we have to undertake. And this is something that might, in some way, in shape or form, provide a new way for us to engage in learning and professional development. So that's what I'm taking from this. And you guys can take whatever you want from this. And so after Stephen, we're going to hear from a fellow from San Francisco. His name is Jay Knapp. He's the Director of Innovation for the City of San Francisco. His role is almost identical to mine, actually, for San Francisco. And I met him when I stumbled across this site that gave some information about open source enterprise-level software application development. And it was called the Quali Foundation. And the Quali Foundation had groups of higher learning institutions, universities primarily, and other types of agencies that were collaborating to develop software that was specific to their needs, that met their needs more uniquely than they could if they were to buy it off the shelf and have customizations made and so on. And so I thought, wow, what a perfect type of model for government. I mean, we spend across Canada billions of dollars in software. Software development, and here's an open source model that is built by the community itself for the community itself. So they build and maintain that software. So I thought, how could this be used for government? So I just, out of curiosity, Googled Quali for Government, and indeed there was actually already a grassroots group, they just started, like literally weeks before, that had started an initiative to look at just that question, what could this type of model mean for government? And got in touch with them, and lo and behold, next thing you know, I'm on this committee just a sounding board and somebody that can give some insights and talk and share with them. So he's going to talk to us a little bit about just 10 or 15 minutes about what Quali for Government is. I think he's going to give a bit of background on the Quali Foundation as well. And so the challenge here, though, is we've been moved up. Well, first of all, he thought we were on it at 2:30, which is 10:30 his time, and I told him this morning, no, it's actually 1:30, 9:30 this time, and now we're moving up again. And I haven't communicated with him yet. So as Stephen's presenting, I'm going to be on Skype here trying to communicate with him to let him know that we have to juggle as we go. So that's what I'm going to be doing. So it should work fine, the Skype connection. And he'll be just up there on the screen, that's all, as opposed to 3D. So without any further ado, I think I'll invite Stephen to talk to you a bit about what he's doing.
Sure. Well, thanks a lot, and I appreciate the chance to be able to come and present to you today. And I will say that this is one of very few conferences I've ever been to where I've walked into the room and the organizer said, "We're running a little ahead of time today." Just to let you know, and this is part of the overall message too, I am recording this talk. I record all of the talks that I do, all of the work that I do, in fact, and put most of that online. So if you say anything, keep in mind, we won't even need to go through WikiLeaks. It'll be up on my website. And working openly and sharing openly is a big part of what I do, and it's a big part of the organizational principle around which learning in the fashion just described by Stephen here takes place. What I'm going to do in the time that I have here, and I've promised to be short, sharp, and insightful. I'll be the first two anyways. What I plan to do is talk briefly about some of the work that we're doing, the courses that we've put online, actually show you the Plank course, and look briefly at the back end, the administration section of the Plank course, and then talk a wee bit about the theory behind the organization, why we did it that way, and what some of our thoughts are on that. I don't do this alone. I work with a group of people at the National Research Council in Moncton, just down the highway, where we too use Freddie's Own. That was a big surprise to Stephen. For those of you who are familiar with Freddie's Own, I'm a regular user of it, and I love the service. So if you're ever questioning whether it's a good idea, free municipal wireless, good idea. Anyhow, also I work with colleagues from across Canada and indeed around the world on these courses. And one of the neat things about this approach to learning is that it does break down boundaries, it does break down barriers, and links people together through common interests from around the world. The signature project that we've been working on at NRC actually has nothing to do with this. It's work with a learning management system company called Desire to Learn. And if you're in HR or training or anything like that, you know all about learning management systems. They're basically traditional mechanisms for putting courses online, and you have your course pages, and you have your discussion pages, and quizzes, and assignments, and that. We're very good at that, and we've been doing some of the back-end work for Desire to Learn, which is a Canadian LMS vending company, doing some of their logic for their content creation systems and the like. Here's some of the stuff that we've done. This is the Instructional Design Wizard. They did the actual hands-on programming, but at NRC, we designed the logic and the workflow behind that. It's an innovative, rule-based mechanism. We're very proud of it. Our research agenda with Desire to Learn included digital rights management. It included automated metadata extraction, learning design accelerators, workflows, and all of the related systems around it. So a big part of the work that we do is to get our hands very dirty in learning technology standards, software, and all of the squiggles and arrows and things that go in between. Another thing that I do, and Stephen mentioned it, is something called OL Daily. OL Daily stands for Online Learning Daily. It's a daily newsletter. Well, weekdays, because I take weekends off, because I work for the government. No, just kidding. OL Daily is something I've been doing on email since 2001, on the web since, and RSS since 1995-96. And what it is a daily compendium of interesting news, developments, research results, etc., in the field of online learning, learning technology, new media, and related areas. And I construe related areas very loosely. What's significant about OL Daily, and subscribe or not, it doesn't matter, it's up to you guys whether you find it useful, but what's significant about it is that it puts me into this process where every day I'm doing this practical applied research in my field. It takes me about an hour a day, and every day I'm in this process of reading, rewriting, connecting, linking, sharing, and this model of learning as well. It's gotten me a job with the Research Council, and it's proven to be incredibly powerful as a way of keeping up with developments in the field. And there's a bunch of mechanisms around doing something like OL Daily. And a lot of the stuff that I'm about to talk about is derived from my work with OL Daily. The idea of OL Daily, and systems similar to that, is that instead of doing my work inside a single container, like a learning management system, I see myself at the center of a largish web of connected resources. This is the very famous personal learning environment diagram authored by a guy called Scott Wilson. He's in Britain, CEDIS, actually, is the name of this organization. And they're, I forget the name of the city, they're in northwest England, way out in the wilderness there. Anyhow, the idea is that where it says future VLE, that's me, that's the learner, I'm at the center. And then through various web standards, various APIs and other mechanisms, I connect to other services on the web. I connect to my photos on Flickr, I connect to my blog posts on Blogger, I connect to task lists, I connect to learning management systems, I connect to library systems and the like. Thing is, this is just a proposal. That system doesn't exist yet. There are things that do some of that sort of work. This is Google Reader. This is my main workhorse tool for preparing OL Daily. Google Reader is a system that allows me to aggregate what are called RSS feeds. These are XML representations of the concept of websites. So I'm bringing in content with Google Reader. I'm displaying it, and I'm able to review a large volume of material in a very short period of time. Google Reader is really handy because it brings everything to me instead of me going here, then here, then here, then here, then here, all over the web. Google Reader is really, right now, my PLE. But the other side of it is the interaction. Google Reader is good for bringing stuff in, but for me, speaking out, not so useful. And so I've used things like the newsletter and the software that I've developed to support the newsletter in order to present materials online. This is a link to the Connectivism course. It's called Connectivism and Connective Knowledge. It was first offered by George Siemens and myself in 2008. We put it online as a Connectivist course, and I'll talk a bit about what that means in a sec, but we put it up. It's a course. It's a really niche area. Figured 50 people, 30 people, maybe 20. We got 2,200 people. And what was really interesting for us, anyways, is the system that we set up worked for 2,200 people. We actually had a good course. People felt involved, people felt engaged, and people were learning. How did we do that? We did it by distributing everything. We didn't have everybody come into one room. Imagine 2,200 people in this room. It'd be ridiculous. We had people work where they were and send communications back and forth. So we did Connectivism and Connective Knowledge in 2008, 2009. 2009 was a much smaller course, only 700 people. I did Critical Literacies with Rita Kopp earlier this year. That was an even smaller course. That had about 300 people. So I'm sort of seeing a trend there, sort of peak in 2008. Anyhow, this is the course structure. It was a short, sharp little course, 6 weeks on the elements of critical literacies. People got a lot out of it, and it was interesting because it was the first course that actually went outside our core area of learning technology. Then in the fall, we offered Plank 2010, Personal Learning Environments, Networks, and Knowledge. And that course attracted about 1,700 people, one of which was Stephen. And again, we found that the mechanism, the systems that we use worked very well. This is a representation of Plank. It's a little bit hard to see because there's light in this room. But this, you might notice, does not look like an ordinary course structure. Normally, you'd see something like I showed you a couple of slides ago, right? first unit, second unit, third unit, etc. If you're representing the software environment, you might see a little line in a box to represent the discussion area or the chat area. This is what ours looks like. That's just the stuff that we did, the instructors in the course. It represents the different areas of the course and how they're connected together. Imagine now, take this and add a similar sort of structure for each of 1,700 students. And that's the actual structure of the course. What we did is, in this course, we created a very thick, or what's the word I'm looking for? Rich, fine-grained weaving or tapestry. Everything, well, not everything, but things were connected together. There was no do this, then do this, then do this. It was more like an ecosystem rather than a book. Now, the tool that made this work is something I developed in NRC called Grasshopper. And the idea of Grasshopper is that it does what Google Reader does. It brings in RSS feeds, but it also provides me with an environment where I can merge these resources, rework these resources, and then send them out in the form of RSS feeds or newsletters or whatever. So, let me just pop in. Oops, that's not where I wanted to go. And I'm just going to pop in briefly into Plank. So here's Plank. It's online. It's all still there. And the different elements of the course you can see here are at the top. The wiki is what we used to plan out the course. The idea, and hopefully is still running, yeah. So it's a wiki, so it's kind of the styling isn't so great. But the idea here is that anybody can edit this course. If you register for the course, you're signed into the wiki. So students who want to reorganize the course can do that. If they want to add new resources to the list of resources that we offer, they can do that. In practice, they tend not to. In practice, they tend to add resources on their own site and wait for us to find them, which is kind of interesting. We had the course blog, and the course blog was where we, the instructors in the course, would offer longish, more detailed posts about the content. The spacing is a little off, but it seems to work okay. It's a little off on my screen here, so I'll go back so I don't have access to my back button. We also, in the course, had live sessions. We used the Illuminate conferencing system. Through the 10 weeks, we had a session on Wednesday with a guest speaker, session on Friday with the moderators ourselves, and then, of course, we saved all the recordings. All of this is still there, still available, and anybody can look at it. It's an ongoing resource. And probably the most important part of the course was the thing called the daily. It's showing some of it. The daily is very similar to OL Daily, in concept and in design. And the idea is that in the daily, we're giving people access to all the different resources that have been created in various places on the web related to this course over the previous 24 hours. And the daily is what participants described as the backbone of the course, the life thread of the course, etc. What I'd like to do is I'm going to pop you into the system that we use to create the daily. So this is the actual Grasshopper administration screen. Oops, I didn't want to go into that link. Okay. That's the link to the Grasshopper logo. Oops, no M in bin. Sorry about the typos in the Euro typing. Okay, so this is the back end to Plank 2010. And what we did is when people joined the course, we asked them to either use the blog or whatever that they already had or create a new blog and then to send to us the RSS feed. We gave them this link, and this link gave them a simple little form, nothing complicated there, the title, the RSS URL, and if they wanted a description of their RSS feed. Now, what the RSS feed is, any time that you create a blog, a Flickr area, a delicious set of feeds, etc., these software services produce an RSS feed, which is an XML representation of the content of that. You can see that simply by clicking on this, and you'll see this little symbol show up anytime there's an RSS feed. And when you click on that, this one might break because it might be misaddressed. Nope. Here's the representation of the RSS feed. And then if you really want to enjoy the squiggles, there's what the RSS feed actually looks like. And that's computer-readable content that represents the content of the page. We use this. We take this RSS feed that is submitted, the address is submitted by the person who has joined the course, and we collect those. So here's a list of all the feeds that were produced by people who were signed up for the course. These are and there's a lot of them, and they keep coming in, even though the course is done. These are the RSS feeds that were created by people participating in the course. And they go on and on and on. How many are there? There's 236. So out of the 1,700 people who signed up, 236 people created their own content on their blog, their Flickr account, their Delicious account, anything that produces an RSS feed. And then they send it to us. Now, we review these, and there's a little bit of skill involved here because when you approve something, so here I'm approving this feed, and I've forgotten what it was already. Oh, there it is. One of the things you have to do is test it out because people still put in the wrong URL for their RSS feed. There's a little gap there that needs to be automated a bit better. So anyhow, what happens now is Grasshopper will take what they've sent to us and harvest it. So there's the harvester. What it's doing is it's going from the course site out to this blog that's just been submitted to us, looking at the RSS file, bringing the content back in and storing it. So there it is, storing content. Different RSS feeds are used for different services. For example, here we have, you see this week 10 general discussion. This is the RSS feed from the discussion list for the course. I can harvest that as well. And if any new discussions were created, maybe not, since the course is over, and it might take a second. Yep. Yeah, here we go. No, they're all existing entries. So had there been any new discussion, these new discussions would have been harvested as well. Delicious, which is a place where you can store your bookmarks online. We created some tags or short representations or short strings, code strings representing the course, like plank is a tag that we used. So we created a tag on Delicious. Now we can harvest the Delicious RSS feed for that tag, and people have been, or have not been, adding to the Delicious plank. Maybe there's a couple of tags here. Maybe there's one under the other tag. So anyhow, I'm doing this manually, but we set it up so that this thing happens automatically. I have a little system where every 60 seconds it goes out, harvests another RSS feed. So okay, that's perfectly uninspiring so far. But what happens is we take all of these RSS feeds, we bring them together, and then we create a newsletter out of them. In Plank and in the other courses, the newsletter was called The Daily, and so here's The Daily, and I'm just going to go into it here. This is the page we used to create The Daily, and this is what The Daily looks like, and well, not too much today because, of course, the course is over, but what it's doing is here are the links that were just harvested, and if you see here, you can see the name of that blog. These are the links that were just harvested from that blog that we just approved into the course. And during the course, The daily was filled with facilitator posts, discussion posts from the discussion list, delicious links, participant blogs posts, Twitter posts. They're still talking about the course on Twitter. It's a never-ending Twitter of Twitterers. Twittering away. The Twitter people have not stopped using the Planck tag. And this is common, right? This is what happens in this course. So, and that's the technology. I've given you the whole technology. There's nothing more secret behind it than that, right? You saw the RSS code. You saw the harvester that brings in the code. You saw the way we just display the results on this page. The one last thing we could do is I could come back here, come back to the admin screen, and this is another bit that's automated, but I'll do it manually. Send newsletters. I'll send it to admins only because the subscribers won't be very happy with me. So this is going to send the newsletter. So it's going to go out by email. And what happened is in the course, every morning when they turn on their computer, each day they have their Planck email with all these links from all the other participants, the Twitter tweets, all of that. They don't miss a thing. And I can tell you from experience, they love it. And let's see if it showed up in my email yet. No reading my email, please. Here it is. Oop, that's the statistics. And you can see the newsletters, 1630 are still subscribed to the newsletter. Oh, right, I've turned it off, so I'm not going to actually get a newsletter in my mailbox. But if it had been on, I would have gotten the... You would have seen exactly the same thing that was on the webpage in my mailbox. Kind of hard to demo a course after it's done, but anyhow, you get the idea. That's the whole technology. So, here we go. So Grasshopper, and this is what Stephen saw demonstrated in St. John. I presented it a couple of, was it 2 years ago?
I think so.
And it was an earlier version, obviously, and it was before we had done the courses. And then Dave Cormier, who works at UPEI, presented Planck specifically at this year's Innovation Forum, same technology. And the idea here is that we're approaching learning with a system like this in a different way. Instead of simply trying to amass resources that everybody will remember, what we're trying to do is set up this organization, this connection between people. And the idea is that the communication and the connection between people is what produces the knowledge rather than the delivery of learning content. This organization is really what's important, not the presentation of facts or theory. The organization of these people that are connected together, that are working on common themes, common areas in a common discipline, although scattered around the province, around the country, around the world. We had people from, I forget how many countries, 20 or 30 different countries, every continent but Antarctica, and we're working on that. It's this organization that produces the knowledge that people learn in the course. So we don't have this curriculum ahead of time that we're going to get people to learn. People learn what they need to learn from other people who are engaged in that field. The idea is that the knowledge isn't located in some place and just needs to be delivered. The idea is that the knowledge is distributed across this web of connections, and that to learn a discipline, to be a physicist, to be an HR person, to be even a doctor, to be a lawyer, is to learn how to traverse that network of connections, to get knowledge here, knowledge here, knowledge here, bring these things and apply them there, to know who to ask, to know what to do. All of these things constitute the knowledge of a discipline. Knowing a discipline is much more than just knowing the definitions, the facts, and the theories. And I think we all know that as practitioners of our own discipline. So a connectivist course isn't just a bunch of people stepping through the content. It wouldn't make sense to try to do that. Even the courses that we've been putting on are a bit of a stretch for us because we don't really like the idea of something starting up, going for 10 weeks, and then stopping. And we've done it because Dave and George are in a university context and they have rules and things like that. But really, a connectivist course has no beginning, has no end, has no membership. There's no clear sense of being in the course or out of the course. You just participate to the extent that you want. You start when you want. You finish when you want. There's no curriculum. There's no body of knowledge. That is not to say there's no content. There is content. There's a lot of stuff we talked about, but the content is, as I say sometimes, the MacGuffin. The MacGuffin is a concept, I think, defined by Alfred Hitchcock. The MacGuffin in a movie is the thing that everybody wants. So the MacGuffin in The Maltese Falcon is The Maltese Falcon. The MacGuffin in one of those spy thrillers might be the briefcase with all the secrets. The movie is about that, but the movie isn't about the MacGuffin. You don't even see the Falcon at the end till the end of the movie. And even then, it's not, anyhow, I don't want to give you a spoiler in case you haven't seen it. But the idea is that the MacGuffin is the thing around which all the characters interact, around which all the action interacts. The movie is about the characters and the interaction. The MacGuffin is just the thing that gets them going. That's what content is in an environment like this. So we get that kind of environment, that kind of swirling around, connections, interactions, discussions, activities, and you get the unexpected, like Reeve Duckworks. This is the product of one of the students trying to describe the concept of the personal learning environment in the Planck course. And he did the concept map, said it looked like a duck, and so we get connected with this Duckworks. It's the unexpected, the serendipitous that makes this mechanism of learning something a lot more interesting than simply transferring content. That's basically what I wanted to talk to you about today. Short, sharp, and hopefully insightful. My URL is downs.ca. You are, of course, welcome to visit, drop me a line. And if it works for you, great. If it doesn't, that's also great. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Stephen. So what struck me as I was going through this process and participating, I actually participated in CCK 09 as well, briefly, and then Planck 2010, was the, as you use the word quite apropos, is serendipity. So I'm out there and I'm making blog posts and I'm interacting with people in different ways, and I'm having people in this 1,700-person network that are seeing my posts, and for those people that have some potential insights or some thoughts to expand or expound on what I'm thinking, or answers to my questions, they get in touch with me. So I'm getting responses and creating conversations and dialogue with people literally all over the world, in Netherlands, in Australia, across the US, and of course within Canada and Brunswick as well. And so here's what I'm thinking. This is one, thank you, Stephen. So this is one thought. I took this and I thought, what about the possibilities here for government? Not just SMB, but for government. SMB as well. And so, I mean, we're constantly, you know, creating new knowledge. We don't necessarily always share it that well. And we don't necessarily know where it exists or that it exists at all. We don't necessarily know across our organization or distributed network of people and professionals who has what knowledge and where they have it. Or if they're even interested to share it. But something like this, if you took this concept, how these courses work, this connectivism approach, that you might be able to, A, allow that knowledge that is stuck all in all these places across government to be freed up a little bit. But what really struck me, because of the networks of people that I started to make connections with, was that I'm also going to break down barriers and break down silos. I'm going to have relationships with people in other branches of government that I didn't even know they existed before. Maybe they're trying to do the exact same thing that I am. And by the way, they are. There are people out there that are trying to do something similar to what you're trying to do. So that's what got me thinking that this is an interesting concept for us here at Service for Brunswick and more broadly in GNB, and even more broadly across Canada. Because there are distributed networks of people that are working in our space, in public service delivery, access to government services, all over Canada and around the world. And they're facing similar problems. Sometimes they have insights that we might be, really interested to get hold of, or knowledge that we could benefit from, or interested in collaborating on projects that we both want to achieve. So this is what got me thinking when I started reading what Stephen was doing, and I participated in that course, you know, mostly in the evenings, on my own personal interest, but I thought it would be something that, might be of interest to start sharing with people in government, starting here at Service for Brunswick. And so just a bit of a seed of an idea, and that's one of the things that I want to do is to try to plant new seeds of new ideas that might take root. They might not, and that's okay too. But hopefully hopefully you got something to think about from this. So next, hopefully...
Yeah, you still have to hit your...
You still have to hit what?
Your function F8 for your screen.
Sorry.
Oh yeah, you'll want that too. Sorry.
I want this too. So now for something a little different. Okay, now Jay is in San Francisco. I hope this is going to work. So I'm going to start a video call. This is the first time we've talked, so this is a live test. always beware of the live test.
Live dangerously.
Live dangerously. Oh, good. Hi, Jay. Can you hear me okay? I'm not hearing you very good, though. Just one second. I'm going to check my volume.
Plugs in the right place.
Plugs in the... Oh, my volume's turned way down. Say something now, Jay.
Hi, this is Jay.
Ah, right on. Here we go. We're working good. So let me just open up the screen a little bit.
Yeah. Perfect.
So which is the... Full screen. Jay, you're now you've got at least a 5 foot head on the wall.
Excellent.
Jay, I'm going to introduce you to our audience just briefly here by taking my webcam and showing you the room. So this is your audience. And Jay, I've given you a little bit of an introduction. What I told people is how I came across you through Quality for Gov via Quality Foundation. And beyond that, and I explained what you were doing in San Francisco, so feel free to expound on those and look forward to hearing what you have to say to us today.
Okay, great. So welcome and thank you everyone for giving me this opportunity to speak with you. My name is Jay Anth and I'm with the City and County of San Francisco. I'm the Director of Innovation. So I have the privilege of working on kind of groundbreaking, cutting edge services and technologies and ideas and bringing them into government. A lot of the work that we've been doing is around open government, open data, so sharing structured machine readable data with the public. We've also been looking at how to better engage our technology community. And, you know, one of the major problems that continues to arise that we talk about is why are we continuing to be inventing the wheel? We all have the same problems, whether it's in Vancouver, New Brunswick, or San Francisco, where we have the same issues, and yet we're trying to solve and make these issues very independently. At a minimum, we should have a dialogue. And I think, you know, there's a greater opportunity in the technology space because of open source technologies and just the ability for technology to scale and really meet a wide variety of uses. So with that, you know, this isn't a really radical idea, but, you know, we really were excited when we found out about quality. And the discovery of quality came about with my CIO, Chris Meehan, going to an open source conference and meeting the chair of quality, Brad, and them having a discussion, and our eyes were really widened by the fact that there was a group of people that were doing this successfully, and they'd been doing it for 6-7 years, and that was very, very impressive to notice. And it was beyond the idea stage, and they were actually doing it, and they were doing it in a setting and context that was very similar to ours in academia. And they have the same challenges, political issues, cultural issues that we face as well. So that's given us a very very strong, it's been a very strong motivator for us and clear proof point that this concept can work and it has worked. So Qualia is a better way, I think, for collaboration. And some of the principles of Qualia are open source technology, ensuring that everyone can participate and collaborate with that. And they were very specific about how they went about doing it. So they made sure that it was a certain type of open source license called Apache, which is very open. People can do whatever they want with that software. So if somebody wants to protect it and make money off of it, that's great. And that's the really interesting part is the structure of Qualia. It really welcomes commercial partners and recognizes commercial partners as a key part of it. But a lot of the work that we do with technology in government, part of the method, we often have the staff, skill sets, to kind of manage software, install it, and make changes. So it's a critical ingredient in keeping this success. They also have a platform, technology platform, they've got templates, a governance body, a governance model. So it's a very mature, nonprofit organization that facilitates conversations between academic institutions here in the U.S. and I think throughout America. And, the work that they're doing is not trivial work. They've actually put together ERP-type systems, like financial systems, where organizations, academic organizations, are actually moving away from, the traditional players like Oracle and PeopleSoft, and actually finding that this is a much better solution and at a fraction of the time of the cost, and it's a much better fit. So looking at that, we decided, hey, we do the same thing as Qualia's doing in the government space. And what we've been saying is, let's not try to actually replicate Qualia or create a fork of Qualia. Can we actually make it technic? Why not expand what Qualia is? So that's kind of the perspective and approach that we're taking. But it's a delicate dance. We have to work with a larger organization, and they've got a very clear mission. So you want to make sure that we're not creating any issues or allergic reactions to them. So we're trying to watch it very, very carefully. But they've been kind enough to actually give us their platform, their collaboration platform to use. And what we're doing actually is kind of not only looking at their governance model and how they actually work, but actually doing a trial run. And what we've done is we've invited several cities, and it's an open invitation at this point to other cities. We've got Portland, San Francisco, of course, Marin County, which is just north of San Francisco, New Brunswick, we've got Bloomington, we've got other cities that are involved in. What we're doing is decided that we work on a very simple example. And that use case was developing a mobile platform or application that allows constituents to submit requests for city services. So if they see a pothole or graffiti, they can submit a request through their iPhone or Android or BlackBerry application. And, we've got a thought name of 311. So, we're doing that, and the great thing is that there's already a piece of open source work out there. Portland has created something that's open source. It's kind of tuned to their needs, and one of the great things about collaboration is you have enough diversity. Not only do you get great opinions and different perspectives, but you also get a better outcome. There is a little bit more, friction, or there's a little bit of drag with that collaboration, but I think the benefits of collaboration definitely have to be those minimal costs of communication. And definitely having a collaboration platform that we apply facilitates that and reduces that issue. So we have put together a project plan. We're now working on requirements. And our goal is to create a platform that's open source that has commercial entities that support and install that in different cities, and that is standard-based. So some of the work that we've done around the government has been around creating standard communication protocols, one of them being Open 3.1 API. And that's a two-way communication. Not only do we push information out to the public, but we also take information back in, and that's actually quite, it's a revolutionary, it's a very big step forward for the government. A lot of private sector companies are doing it, but not government so much. And what we're seeing with that is that we can create a platform that any city that wants to use this can at a very low cost and get a huge, huge benefit from it. So we're excited and we're hopeful that if we're successful with this, not only do we prove the fact that the quality of governance structure and model works for the government, but we've also created hopefully something that attracts media attention and attention from other cities that we can kind of create a critical mass of participation. And last, we're hoping that Quality as a nonprofit organization welcomes us with open arms and kind of expands the tent. So that's really where we're going. We're hoping to move fairly quickly, hopefully by March or April 2011, have something out there for the cities to use. And we're recognizing that not all cities are alike. Some cities may not have a advanced ticketing system behind their firewall. Some may just have to accommodate that and be willing to do that. So that's really what we're trying to accomplish. I'm very excited about it. I'm excited to have various cities participate in this. And I think the future really hasn't been written yet, and there's a lot of potential here, especially if you look at what Quality has done in the academic space. So I'm very excited and hoping that more people join in this nascent movement. That's pretty much Quality in a nutshell. If anyone has any questions for me or would like me to expand on any areas.
Thanks very much, Jay. Can you hear me from here?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Great. So let's just see if there's any questions. Does anybody have any questions at all? I guess not. Jay, look, thanks very much for coming and talking to us today all the way from San Francisco. I appreciate it. And I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you for the opportunity. Take care, folks.
Great. Bye. Thanks to Jay from San Francisco. So what happened here, as I did introduce before, is just in case you can catch a few things. So the Quality Foundation is this open source community of similar like organizations that are developing applications, enterprise applications for their own specific purposes. So it's pretty much meets their needs more intuitively. And so the concept here is to take this model and extend it to government to see if government can do the same thing. And this small little grassroots group, Quality for Gov, has decided to go with one very small pilot project to test the concept, to see if it spreads, to see how the community works. And they've decided to leverage existing work in the open source world, started by Portland, that has developed an open 3.1.1 app that has now been started on the iPhone. Now it's also on the Android platform. Where, as you can imagine, that concept, we have that actually. Service Monitor provides that type of solution to municipalities today. It's report problem, and report problem now though is on smb.ca on our website, and kind of buried from municipality places, at the municipality sites, and it works a lot differently, but it's the main thing is on that computer. So somebody's walking down the street, street ramp out, or a pothole, or a plug drain, or something, up some other problem. And if they want to report that problem, over the time you get home or to their office, they may have forgotten about that or forgotten the location. They're likely not going to use it. Indeed, I've discovered we're not using it. It's not being used. This concept is a mobile platform. So if you're walking down the street and you've got a mobile phone, a smartphone, you can take a picture of the problem. You can start a category. Of course, you're able to collect your GPS coordinates. If you want to provide your personal information, you can, but you don't have to, and you send it and you continue walking down the street. If you've required you want to be updated about the progress, what they'll do is through the workflow, they'll respond to you to let you know, thank you, so-and-so received the problem. Oh, by the way, we already knew that it existed because it was reported an hour ago, and we have a clear one to staff now to take care of this situation. So that's a specific incidence of a pilot that's being worked on. And he mentioned New Brunswick because simply because I'm on their committee. And but Maurice Valland of the city is keenly interested in this. He wanted to be here today, but he couldn't. So they're interested in this. And speaking to Carol and McDonald this morning, this might be possibly a new approach to how we're providing that service today that's not being used. So this is the idea that I wanted to present to you today. This is something that's new that's out there. My goal today was to provide you with some new insights and some new things that are happening that may have some potential or may not for service funds within DMV and a bigger picture. So if there's any questions at all to me, to Stephen, happy to answer them. If not, I think that that's it for the innovation part of things. No? Okay. Thanks a lot.